It's amazing to think how dependent we've become on our computers when just 30 years ago they were rare and not very accessible for the average person. And the internet is an even more recent development. But for better or worse, computers are a large part of everyday life now, which means when something goes wrong with our machines, it can affect many different parts of our lives. Well, lucky for us, we have Peter Green to help. Peter is an independent computer consultant, and he comes by the first Monday of each month to help us all with our computer problems. Peter, great to see you again.
Always great, Judith.
And it's our second month in a row.
Yeah.
We're on a roll here. And Larry and the WPR Garden Tour Group landed in London this morning. And he already sent one picture to make us all jealous of the gorgeous garden at their hotel. So if that's what the hotel garden looks like, I can only imagine what the actual gardens they're touring will look like. So you can take a look at that on our Facebook page. And we're certainly wishing Larry and the whole group, I think it's about 30 total, a great about 8 days in London and Southeast England.
We talked about wanting to be there.
We did talk about wanting to be here. And Peter, here we are. We're not there. We're going to have to talk a little louder or to the right people next time. But we'll keep everybody updated on what they're doing and what they're seeing. And as the Earthbound Expeditions folks send us photos and videos, we will get those up on the Facebook page. Well, Peter, we talked about starting with networks. Let's talk a little bit about exactly what a computer network is and what do we mean when we say the computers are networked.
When the computers are networked, they're interlinked, talking to each other, and they talk to each other in different ways. One is to share files, one is to share programs, one is to share attached devices.
And when you say that, like a printer or a scanner or something like that?
Could be all of the above. There are dedicated devices for networking music, streaming video, and all. Look at all the smart TVs, which have built-in, you know, depending upon which brand and which model you choose, have different internet, Bluetooth features to make it easier for them to talk to other devices. So the world has really evolved networking electronics, and the internet is a network of computers. And there's no way to bring down the entire internet because it's so diverse. There was this worm back, I think, in the early 90s that was a Unix worm that took down like 10% of all the computers.
And but a worm is?
Something that got in back door behind the scenes and started basically taking over.
It's like a computer virus on steroids.
It's a computer virus, yep. And just traveling at light speed to whoever else had that kind of computer personality, if you want to call it, or operating system, and would make it not work.
And so,
or become a slave to whatever it wanted.
Right, it would redirect.
So sometimes worms or Trojans get behind the scene, and the host or the user of the host doesn't know that the system is infected and is in fact doing things that it has decided it wanted to do on your behalf or stated that it's on your behalf. Little inkling or things that we see in today's world is when someone's email gets hijacked and messages are sent out that sound like it's coming from a friend or a relative, but in fact it was their email that got hijacked and now it's doing it for whatever that hijacker wants.
So there are a few different ways that you can network different devices together. What does it mean when we say that computers are hardwired together?
When computers are hardwired, Ethernet is the typical way that the networks, the network devices talk to each other, the Ethernet protocol. And that was developed a very long time ago. I'm trying to remember his first name, but Dr. Metcalf was the father of the Ethernet. 3Com was a company he helped found it out in Mountain View, California, a long time ago. And he had developed hardware and software, and his software side didn't take off, but he always had the Ethernet stuff. So, you know, the Ethernet platform took off. Novell was another popular networking. So when devices are hardwired, there is an actual cable, and it's got color-coded cable, and, you know, everybody knows what it is. It's a standard. And then cable is, has different ratings, which means it's really for different transmission speeds, because what's happened is the Ethernet speed, the transmission speed, has evolved over time with different standards. And in order to allow the communication between hardwired devices to be faster and faster, the standards were changed and modified, and the cable had to be up to spec for that. So I think the latest one is like 6E or something, which is, and then there'll probably be another one coming out because they keep tweaking it, making it faster and faster. But what's going on right now is it's kind of stagnant at the high speed that a lot of people are using, would be 1 gigabit throughput. So GIGABYTE. There's the next level of standard beyond that, but it's very expensive, and it really hasn't moved all that much.
And would the average user need that higher speed?
Probably not, because the limiting link for most people in bringing in the internet signal into their house or their business is, you know, let's cut it and say, you know, 10 meg, mm-hmm. you know, well, 10 meg divided by 1 million is quite a difference.
Right, right.
10 million divided by 1 million is mm-hmm. you know, 1,000-fold difference. So, mm-hmm. So the limiting link becomes the internet speed, and then it's sliced and diced based on how many users you have. So, and then if you do Wi-Fi, it's pretty rare to get a one-to-one relationship between download speed on hardwired and Wi-Fi.
And let's talk about Wi-Fi. So another way to connect to the internet, to connect to other computers, to connect to, say, a printer, is wirelessly. So,
correct.
So what is involved with wireless networking?
Well, in the Ethernet protocol, in the internet protocol, and that's really what devices are using to network to each other, is you have what's called an IP address, an internet protocol address. And it was at four blocks of three numbers for mm-hmm. a very long time. It's now up to six, but most people don't use the six. And in fact, sometimes the six gets in the way, so they tell you to shut it off. Mm-hmm. So, the Wi-Fi has the internet protocol built into it, into these devices, and they go through either wizards or instructions to tell you how the devices can see each other. And they've gotten pretty good at it, where, you know, things are a little bit more closer to plug and play than they ever have been. But I used to laugh when I think one of the, I don't know if it was Windows 95, talked about being plug and play, and it was so far from the truth. So the wireless devices see each other through this internet protocol, and another thing is called the subnet mask. So all these things have to have some common ground or commonality mm-hmm. between them. And if it's not there, they won't see each other. So in the setup, you're told, okay, this is the way it needs to be. And then when you connect another device, you have to pay attention. You can't give it the same IP.
Right.
But you have to pay attention to what the other numbers are to make sure that they're the same mm-hmm. so that they do see each other. And sometimes you can use names like work groups are pretty common, domains, for devices to be able to see each other. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a little flag for them to say, oh, that's another machine
another
in our
one
group.
My neighborhood or my club. Exactly. And then the other thing is SSIDs with wireless networking are broadcast identifications of a Wi-Fi that's being, you know, that's out there. So coming from your house or coming from a neighbor. And I've used this term for many years. It's called war driving. Is where someone drives around with a laptop trying to pick up on an unsecure Wi-Fi signal. So what are your choices? You can either make your Wi-Fi very secure, or you could make it invisible. You don't have to are routers that allow you to not broadcast.
So it doesn't
SSID.
Even pop up as a local.
You don't see it.
Oh, interesting.
But you have to know, you know, you have to be in range. So it's a little harder to detect if you're in range or not,
right.
Because if you don't see the name, then, you know, how do you, but for the most part, you're probably pretty safe in and around your house. And then some other things that are important to, for people to realize is that there's a way to extend the signal. Even, you know, you have may have a problem with Wi-Fi. It's called power over Ethernet. And there are devices that allow you to extend the signal over your electric power lines within your house through your outlet. So there are those kind of devices, and then you can then extend the Wi-Fi from the other point that you've extended it to. Mm-hmm. So, for example, upstairs to downstairs in your basement, power over Ethernet, and then you can still extend the Wi-Fi downstairs in your basement.
Great.
So as long as the device is labeled properly, power over Ethernet, it works great. I mean, you just have to recognize what you're working with, and PoE is what power over Ethernet means.
Great. We're talking with Peter Green of Infostar.com about personal computer problems and how to network our home computers. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we'll keep talking about networking, Peter, but let's go to the phones because we have some folks that have been waiting patiently to talk with you, including Aaron in Cobb. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I just had a quick question for you.
Sure.
We live in the country, and we have struggled to find an internet connection that's fast enough that when we do some of the secure transactions or training online, different things we do for our profession, it'll actually kick us out because it says the speed is too slow,
okay.
Which then I guess somehow messes with the security. And the dial-up was much, much slower, and we're currently on satellite, and I was wondering if you had a recommendation to speed that up or if there's another product out there that we're not aware of.
All right, thanks for that
color. So what kind of speed do you get with the satellite?
It says, I actually went into the computer the other day to try and determine that,
mm-hmm.
and it says that the speed is 100 megabytes per second, but we're not sure if that's the true speed of what we're receiving or if that's the capacity of the computer or... We're not sure how to determine exactly how fast the download's actually happening.
So did the satellite internet service provider give you a guaranteed speed or tell you, you know, what you should be experiencing?
You know, that's something I should look into. I know they have different speeds that they say are available, but mm-hmm. we are at supposedly their top speed package.
Okay. There's a website called speedtest.net. that you can use for doing speed tests. I also have on one of my web pages a whole bunch of speed tests that you can use. So if you don't have to trust one of them, on Infostar.com, the Virus Info Center page, and then I think it's labeled the speed test, and you'll see a bunch of links there. So it might come in handy someday. But you should probably have you troubleshooted at all with the satellite company, because one of the things that they're able to do is if you're having speed issues and you're saying you're getting the highest rated package, but you're not sure if you're at that level of speed, is to contact them and they can have you make some changes where you might be zeroing in on a different port on the satellite, or there might have to be an adjustment to the satellite itself because they... you know, they're pointing to the dish in the sky. They're pointing that satellite dish in the sky to, you know, receive the signal. And it does make a difference in terms of if there's any barriers or it's off a little bit or the signal strength isn't optimized as much. So I would definitely contact them. As far as other options, you know, cable, but if you don't get cable out there, if there's a business in the area and you have what's called, I'm trying to remember the exact term, but a line of sight where you can actually get a straight shot to the business, there is a way to extend the business signal.
Okay, and we are... way too rural for that.
Okay. And that's how campuses, universities, airports, businesses in metropolitan areas with their high buildings extend the signal between offices is actually They have what are called Yagi antennas, and they point them to each other. And the signal, the wireless network goes across.
Hmm. So it's kind of like skipping stones from building to building.
You won't be skipping. But you could do it for many miles. I think I've heard as far as like over 100 miles for some of them.
Wow.
But you really got to be dialed in. So I guess I would go back to the first thing would be to check with the satellite service provider and just make sure that all the settings that you could possibly have are optimized for bringing that signal in.
Okay.
I don't know if there are really any other well, one other option is if you get satellite, or not satellite, but cellular Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And what that brings in, you know, they talk about 4G, but realistically, even here in Madison, not every area gets 4G service. Right. So in the rural, to expect 4G. But you might be able to get 3G, and 3G might be a lot faster than what you're getting. And they have devices that amplify the 3G signal to bring it in.
Excellent.
It'll probably, and they also make device Wi-Fi devices that allow you to bring in the 3G signal into a wireless router to extend the signal to devices. So who's your cell provider that you have out there?
My cell provider is Verizon.
Yeah, you might want to. I would check with Verizon and see what kind of options you have with them, because I know they do offer that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. And let's go next to Jared in Fitchburg. Hi, Jared.
Hello. I have two possibly related questions, and they have to do with the power option.
Okay.
On my PC, when I tried to do the standby, you can go to the start menu and eventually get to standby. It would go off for about, 5-10 seconds, and it would come right back on again. And I experimented. I started shutting down all the things on the taskbar, and that didn't help. And then one day, I have my router plugged into a separate switch. So I turned the router off, and then I went on standby, and sure enough, it stayed on standby for hours. But I also found that if I had it be on standby for a while with router off, I could turn the router back on again. And it would still stay on standby. I just cannot put it on standby when the router is turned on.
All right, let's see what Pete says.
One thing might be the network card setting to put it on in the sleep mode. Make sure it's in power saving.
Well, I'm looking at the power options now. Is that what you're referring to, or is it something?
It's actually in the network for the network card itself.
In the computer.
Yeah. Well, you can do it through the control panel, or you can go through, which version of the operating system do you have?
XP.
XP. You can, I'm trying to remember, there's so many different ways of doing this, but if you double-click on the two computers that are connected.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you might be able to get to your adapter through that. And then there's a power option setting for that. Or you could go through the control panel and go to the device manager and look for the network card there.
Okay.
The only caution I give you here is that, all the operate Windows primarily going through all the upgrades and fixes is that there are some bugs that do exist. So it sounds to me like if you're able to get your computer to successfully have the card turn itself off to save power, that you might be okay, because you're telling me that your computer doesn't wake up after your router is turned on.
No, that doesn't do it. I have
right.
to press the space
right.
bar or something.
So I'm just saying that, some of these things say they're going to do something, but they don't really do it. So I'm just saying that don't be surprised that there are some flaws in these things. They have good intentions, but then it goes through the evolution of how do we really get this to work. We put it out there, and it works for, 40% of the computers. How do we, make it work better? And that's how things, improve and evolve over time.
I have a laptop, and I just now put it on standby, mm-hmm. and it's connected to the router wirelessly, mm-hmm. and it works just fine. I even had an active Internet Explorer up working.
That probably by default has that feature turned on. Most laptops usually do.
If I compare the two on what's turned on and what's turned off in the device manager, maybe that'll do it. Yep. But on the laptop, I found the battery stopped working. Mm-hmm. I found that out by just turning off the power, and it didn't work. But I went to the power options again, and it said I had 97% battery life left. And I've taken the battery out and checked the contacts, and there's not a whole lot I can do, but they sure look clean and suitable, and I make sure that the battery is in. So I'm not sure if it's giving me a false reading.
So how old's the laptop?
6 years.
Yeah, it's probably reached its life expectancy.
Why would it say 97% in the power option?
Again, it's one of those things that it's, like you said, is it giving me a false reading? It's, you know, don't believe everything you read. And that's really what it is.
Thanks for that call, Jared. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, talking personal computers with Peter Green of Infostar.com. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer today. We're talking about personal computers and especially how to keep those networks working well and running at top form. Gary in Appleton has a question for you, so let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
Hi.
I bought a new Canon PowerShot camera, and I have a PC that's an XP operating system, and I put that old SDHC, high-capacity card into it, and it just kind of froze up. When I pulled the card out, it unfroze. And then I took it down to my laptop downstairs and it read it just fine. It's a new one. And I'm just wondering, I tried putting the hot patch in from Microsoft because I couldn't read 8 gig, which I bought. And I'm just wondering if the device reader could be a problem. Up with my old camera, which was like the, you know, plain old SD card, it reads it just fine.
Excuse me. So, you've got two computers in this. What are the operating systems for each one?
The new one's 64-bit Windows 7.
Okay.
The old one is an XP with a Surface Pack 3 on it.
Okay. And the 7 is the one that's having the problem?
Yeah. No. The 7 works fine. The old one, the XP operating system, it freezes up.
Mm-hmm. It's possible that it may not be able. You said it was an 8 gig card?
Correct. And I put a hot patch on from Microsoft that should allow that to be read.
Yeah, well, that could be the thing in question. You may want to go out there and Google to see what other people are experiencing with that patch and whether that is the end road of success for most people or the beginning of finding the end road to success.
Yeah. There's another thing with the PC that I just noticed it when I tried to click on to our updates, which I have put in automatically.
Mm-hmm.
I tried doing it. It kept saying, it kept shutting it down because it said there was something in memory that was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact wording, and that never happened before.
Hmm.
So I don't know if Something happened with that, or if that's just a side issue.
Yeah, it could, you know, it could be related to the patch. Again, I would probably look and see, because sometimes those things where you think they're supposed to solve the problem just kind of
create new problems.
Well, they create new problems, open up a can of worms.
Yeah.
If you're concerned about trying to get your pictures from one computer to the other. If you have them on a network in your house, you can simply share your Windows 7 user folder where the pictures are, more than likely, and then point your XP to that computer. Just make sure they're in the same work group.
Mm-hmm.
MS Home is a popular name, but you can give it a work group name for each one. The other interesting flaw in networking Windows 7 computers and Windows XP systems, and there might be some people out there going, oh, so that's why I'm having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't reboot your Windows 7 computer probably 1 or 2 weeks, the XP computer will stop seeing it. It has to be rebooted. You could reboot the XP computer as many times as you want trying to see the Windows 7 computer, but until you do the Windows 7 system, it'll never see it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's a known bug. I don't know if they ever fixed it, because it's kind of like, okay, we converted everything to Windows 7, yeah. So we don't really deal with it anymore. But
Well, so it sounds like, Gary, the first thing Gary should do is look and see if there are known bugs with that patch.
Yeah, I would definitely explore that. And I'm sure they're on a number of Windows forums as related to that, because it's a popular area.
Great. All right. Well, good luck with that, Gary.
Thank you.
And from Gary in Appleton, we'll go to Gary in Madison. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Hi.
We've got a laptop and a desktop. They're both about 6-7 years old. They're Dells. They've been running pretty slow. I got on the phone with some outfit called iYogi that was they're supposed to help clean them up so they go faster. Helped for a little while, but now they're slow again, and something happened to my iTunes. I don't know what's going on. Half the songs are missing. All the playlists are gone. But the fella on iYogi told me that part of the problem was because we're on Windows XP, and that he said like 3 or 4 months ago Microsoft no longer supports XP, and that we need to upgrade to Windows 7. Now, you know, I told him we were thinking about getting new computers, and he said, well, if we just upgrade to Windows 7, we'd be just as well off, that these computers will keep going for another 4 or 5 years just by doing that.
I don't know about that part. Sorry. You know, you might have some great hardware, and Windows 7 might work well in them. My best guess would probably be that you should be looking at newer hardware in terms of, you know, if you were looking at Windows 7. But with the problem at hand, in terms of how do you speed up the computer, there could be, you know, a space issue on your system. And I've talked about this many times. One thing is to resize the recycle bin. I don't know if you've done that, where you gain back about 9% of your hard drive space. The operating system's no longer using that. So you right-click on your recycle bin, click on properties, and resize the hard drive so that your recycle bin is now 1% instead of the default 10%.
Wow.
Yeah, I have done that.
Okay.
And I'm looking at the computer now at the local disk C properties, and it's like more than half of it is supposedly is free space.
Okay, well, that's good. All right, have you run any kind of utilities to what they do is they basically, if you're using XP, you can get rid of all the excess baggage files, like temporary internet files and update files that you no longer need. And then do a defragmentation of the drive, which should speed up your system. The other thing is to optimize the system registry so that you don't have errant or bad links within the registry, so that the system wastes its time and energy looking for things to do that it really shouldn't be doing.
Well, every day I get rid of prefetch stuff, and I do a disk cleanup, and I do the the registry cleanup, CC cleaner.
Okay.
So I basically do that daily.
Do you have a lot of things in your right system tray?
No, down at the bottom right.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's a little speaker, and there's a safely removed hardware.
Okay. Do you have any programs running in the background?
I don't know how to tell that.
If you do Control-Alt-Delete and you go to System Manager, and then you can click on Applications, and it'll tell you if you're running anything.
What kind of things run in the background, Pete?
If there's any kind of hidden program that you don't really know that might be on your system that's running, it might show up. Also in the processes, you'd have to go through and define all of the things that are listed. Some of them are valid Windows things, but others might not be. And you need to explore and see if there's something that's taking up a lot of the CPU time, or the memory space, if there's something that's abusing that, and what is it and why.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the next thing to explore. And that's, it's time consuming, but it's there in front of you, and it gives you access to who they are, and then you just have to go out and define each one that seems to have a higher percentage of CPU usage or memory, and see who the offending program is.
Mm-hmm. I know when I log off, sometimes I get a little window that says something about net broadcasting or some odd thing that I don't know what the heck it is.
Yeah, so that might be something that you can look into and disable, but you have to define it, and the only way to do that is go through those lists that when you get control alt delete and get into the system manager to take a look at it.
I'm in Windows Task Manager. Is that what
you
mean?
Or Task Manager, yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's Applications Processes, and there's a bunch of them. There's probably about 30 of them there.
Yep, and they fluctuate, too. Uh-huh. Yeah, you'll see them move up and down.
And so what do you just right-click on each one or something? Or?
What you probably want to do is write them down and then do a search on each one to see what they're actually for.
Okay.
All right. Well, Gary, it looks like you've got some homework to get started on. All right, well, let us know how that goes. And let's go next to Bill in Neenah, who has a question about wireless. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
With connecting to a public Wi-Fi network, how do you be sure that you're connecting safely and that you're not giving unwanted access to your own computer?
First thing is make sure that you don't have any sharing set up on your system. So you wouldn't want to have a share of any kind on your C drive.
And how would you check that, Pete?
You can right mouse click on, if it's a Windows system, right mouse click on it. And if you click on sharing, it should be do not share.
Okay. And anything else to keep in mind for security when you're using a public Wi-Fi?
There are some ways to essentially log on anonymously. I have not used any of those tools recently, but I know you can search them on the internet. And
when you say anonymously, does that mean that your like IP address would be hidden, or what are you hiding?
You're just not, you're on, but you're not really giving out who your identity is.
Okay. And is, in general, our public Wi-Fi spots safe, would you say? Do you use them regularly, Peter?
I do. And, you know, I haven't personally experienced any problems with them. I know there are some very sophisticated devices out there that people use in large metropolitan areas for even cell phone grabbing, you know, trying to grab onto mm-hmm. people's signals. And, you know, unfortunately, that stuff does exist. But in general, I consider it safe.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is if you're logging into a public system in terms of someone else's computer, is that you make sure that you're not saving passwords, username and passwords. And that can, you know, you're on it real quick and you go and do it, you know, to wherever you're going and you log in. And you really need to make sure that the system that you're working on is not saving those, because that's where you know, people can get into mm-hmm. some serious trouble.
Bill, were there specific safety concerns that you had, or?
No, I was just thinking about, you go to a coffee shop, log into their Wi-Fi, what precautions you need to take to keep from having your computer compromised as a result.
All right.
Yep, you should be okay.
Great. Thanks for that call, Bill. And Barbara in Milwaukee, I think, has a related question. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. I just set up my Wi-Fi router, and I don't really have a network yet. In fact, I don't have anything that I'm hooking up Wi-Fi, but I want to buy an iPad. So I don't understand the vocabulary of the setup, and I'm not sure if I've done the right thing with security. Why do I need encryption, and you know, what should I be using for the security level?
Okay.
So this is kind of the other side of the coin from what Bill was asking about. Yep. This is Barbara's own network, wireless network.
The iPad has the ability to communicate with at different levels of the wireless networking speed. So, you know, hopefully you got a router to take advantage of the maximum speed that you can get. The other thing is when you set up the router, when you're picking security, they have different levels of encryption. And you, when you pick the level of, whatever level of encryption you pick, you just have to follow the rules of engagement. So it might be a phrase that you have to use, and, you know, make sure you write these things down, put them in a safe place, and don't make it so difficult that you can't remember what the heck it is, or don't make it so convoluted that it's a crazy combinations and numbers and letters that if the writing fades or the
typing, you're never going to get back.
You're never going to figure out what the heck it was.
Or somebody comes by and you want to give them the password and you can't even figure it out yourself.
Yeah, and you give it to them and then they got to type in 20 or 25 different things. So, I mean, that's my take on it. So encryption protects you, but at the same time, you don't want to make it so difficult of an encryption process that it's painful for, you know, you to make it available for someone else to get on. Now, when you do it for your device, as long as your iPad's going to remember that. So you're not going to have to do it repetitively. So once you successfully make the joining or the linking of your Wi-Fi router with your iPad, once they successfully talk to each other, you're going to be fine.
It'll always automatically look for that and find it and connect. You won't have to do it.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
And I should say all Apple devices are pretty good about, in general, remembering prior networks.
Well, I hope it works. I have one more related question. Mm-hmm. When I say I'm using my new iPad when mm-hmm. I finally get it, does my desktop computer, obviously the router and the modem have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
What about does the computer have to be on as well?
In order to gain access to? No. As long as the router is on, bringing the signal in, and if you're using a cable modem, the cable modem will have to be on. Sometimes the cable modem and the router can be one and the same device, but they both have to be on. The cable modem brings the signal in, and the router distributes the signal, Wi-Fi, and also hardwired. The other thing I was going to make you aware is if you're going to, when you set up your system with iTunes, and you're going to have apps that you're going to want to download, I would highly recommend that you download the speedtest.net app to allow you to see at what speed you're operating. Because if you ever question how fast your wireless connection is, you can always run the test to see how good or bad it is. And it's a good thing to know. It's handy.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good luck.
We're talking with Peter Green of Infostar.com about personal computers, networking, and any issues you might be having with your computers. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mehler Show, and Mehler is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mehler. We're talking about personal computers, networking, Wi-Fi, and much more with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Want to let you know that tomorrow at 11, Anton Troyer is a professor of Ojibwe at Bemidji State University. He'll be here to talk about his new book, Everything You Wanted to Know About Indians But Were Afraid to Ask. And then at 11:45 tomorrow, Vincent Herr is one of the editors of a new collection called Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens, and he'll share reflections on the Hmong experience in the U.S. So I hope you can join us for that. And for now, I hope you can join us to get lots of great advice from Peter Green of Infostar.com. Pete always has great information to share. And let's go next to Andy in Menasha. Hi, Andy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 2-month-old HP laptop. It's running Windows 7. And up until a week ago, I could connect to my wireless network, my router, and every other computer in the house still works fine on that router. But on this laptop, I get an identifying and then the name of the network in parentheses, and it sits there for about 30 seconds, and then it will go to unknown network, and it will give like a false presentation that it has an internet connection. The bars will be there in the lower right corner, but when I try connecting to the internet, it will not connect. It will connect to a local Linksys unsecured network that it picks up, and it will get internet through that.
But it won't connect to your own.
It won't connect to my own, and I've Googled it, and the most common seems to be to disable Bollinger service by Apple. I've disabled the LAN adapter. I've disabled Windows Firewall and Defender. I've temporarily disabled all my firewalls, and I cannot get this thing to work.
What do you think, Peter?
Couple of questions. Have you tried rebooting the router?
I have done a hard reset of the router.
Okay. Have you looked into any of the device drivers for your laptop?
They're all current.
Okay.
I tell it to go look, and it says your device driver is current.
How about the firmware on the router itself?
The firmware?
Yep.
No, I have not checked that. No.
Okay. I would actually check that. I have had that. I've had it happen where all of a sudden we're developing problems, and the last thing that we hadn't checked and done was updating the firmware in the router.
And what is firmware exactly?
Firmware is the simplest way to look at it is a keyboard. How does it know the keyboard? How does it know what the keys are supposed to be doing? That's built into the firmware.
Hmm.
So just by punching a key, the firmware is communicating with the computer what key you pressed.
Okay.
So the router is knowing its settings. All those things are built into it, the factory defaults. And then when you modify them, the firmware can be changed and written to memory. But by doing a hard reset, you take it back to factory defaults, and then you have to modify it again to make it work the way you want.
And how would Andy check the firmware then?
One is sometimes they build it into the router where you can actually do the check and do the process through the router itself. And other times you log in with your web browser, and there's a section of the screen that's devoted to updating the firmware. And it'll also tell you what the firmware is in the router itself. And the firmware that the router comes with is usually written or labeled on the underside or the back of the router, typically on the underside. And you can also go check to the manufacturer's website, and they always detail that very well, because those are issues that networking people know to look at, and it's important information to have.
Now, is it any kind of a clue that it's only the new computer that's not working?
The other thing is I would probably look into Wi-Fi networking problems with your model of computer and the router, because there are on occasion compatibility issues for whatever reason between networking devices between different manufacturers, mm-hmm. and they may or may not know why they exist and why it didn't show up sooner. There could have been something installed that all of a sudden wedged something in the operating system code that's just running a roadblock. Or there's a subtle networking adapter change that you have to be clued into to make in order to make it work. That's what requires the research.
All right.
I've been there many times.
Well, Andy, it sounds like some research and checking out the firmware.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much. And David in Duluth, Minnesota is next. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a 2-year-old Gateway with Windows, and the mouse pad and keyboard don't work at all. Brought it into a commercial place. They drivers. All right, but they couldn't get it to work. The only thing we can do to make it work is to plug in a standard keyboard and a standard mouse. That works fine. But the keyboard and mouse pad on the laptop don't work at all.
And you said this is a 2-year-old machine?
It's a 2 year old machine. It was 2 years old in March.
Okay.
Well, it's possible that that part has, you know, failed within the laptop. It's not typical, but it does happen. And if you can hardwire things in and it's still working, if you've, you know, uninstalled and updated device drivers and it says it's there, but it still doesn't work, then obviously something's not right.
And it just happened overnight. I mean, you just find one day, turn it on, the next day, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah. You know, you could say, well, someone could say, well, why don't you reinstall the operating, you know, rebuild the system. Yeah, it's a lot of effort to go through and try and see if you can actually get it to work that way. Again, it could be something that somewhere, somehow, something wedged its way into the, in between that device and the operating system and caused it to stop working. You could try doing a system restore, you know, a couple of days prior to when you had the problem and see if that is a, you know, is a cure. That would probably be your best bet. So, you know,
the place that I brought it to did do that, the system mm-hmm. restore, and then they checked all the drivers.
Yeah, and it's still,
they were just mystified. They couldn't figure it out at all.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, at the root of things, it's an appliance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, buttons go bad, parts go bad, you know, on cars, things wear out over time, subtly. You know, if it's an off, you know, a fraction of an inch, you don't feel it. But if all of a sudden it becomes off by a quarter of an inch, that's not
right.
The fraction pushes it over the edge, and all of a sudden you feel vibration or something doesn't work mm-hmm. right.
Or overnight, yeah,
right.
The keyboard's not working.
Or if you build something and you're building it and over a distance of, you know, 1 foot, you don't notice the little discrepancy, but over the distance of maybe 30 feet, all of a sudden it's a tilt.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you develop problems. So it's something you can't really put your finger on, but there's obviously a failed component in your system that no longer communicates. Okay. So
it looks like your laptop might be more of a desktop with that attached.
Well, you can get, you know, plug in something to a little USB adapter and use, you know, wireless mouse,
mm-hmm.
Wireless slide pad, trackball. You know, those are all good options.
Great. All right. Well, good luck with that, David. And we had an email from Aaron, actually a Facebook comment. I am in need of a new laptop computer. Is there any big difference between brands? What processor do you recommend? My needs are for word processing, Audacity, and viewing films.
Hmm.
And what is Audacity?
You know, I don't know what Audacity is.
I think it's a sound program.
Okay.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah. It sounds like it's got a good ring to it.
Yeah.
Brands, I would say, you know, if you're looking at, you know, value, you know, a lot of them go on sale all the time. You know, good places to check online, comparing it to, you know, local shops, tiger.com and buy.com. Staples has sales all the time, Office Depot, Best Buy, CNET.com is a great place to do reviews. Acer usually gives a lot of bang for the buck. Samsung is
Acer is A-C-E-R.
A-C-E-R.
Yep. Right.
Yep. Samsung is another good one. Toshiba, HP, which bought Compaq a number of years ago. Dell. So, you know, what I would do is, you know, find one that fits your budget. There's a lot to be had for something that's in the $500 range. You can buy... You
even know, on a laptop?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
4 gigs of memory. What throws the difference in the price is the CPU, how many core processors it has. When you get to something like an i7, or you're looking at something that's more slim and high battery capacity, that's where you start getting into the expense. You can... I've seen laptops with like an i3 and an i5 with at least a 15-inch screen and maybe 6 gigs of memory and large hard drive and video card for, you know, in the $700 range. So there's a lot out there. But what I would definitely do is check the reviews. CNET's a great place. And also the websites that you're looking at buying at, look at what kind of feedback the people that have purchased, because some people say, hey, this is my third laptop that I've had, you know, and it works great compared to this one, or I had this one, and you might have been looking at that model without even realizing it, and they're saying, I had that one and took it back and got this one, you know. So there's a lot, you know, people put up, you know, how they feel about what they bought.
And you're saying, you know, compare things online, but I think it's also good to go somewhere, whether you're going to buy it there or for whatever reason are going to buy online, to also go and actually look at it and touch the keyboard and look at how big that 15-inch screen really is or isn't and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
And, you know, you get a little test drive time, too. You know, people ask me about, you know, extra warranty stuff, and that, you know, it's a numbers game.
All right. We are talking with Peter Green of Infostar.com about personal computers. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Lots more ahead here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Computers can be a tool or a toy or sometimes both at the same time. But however we use them, it can be hard to keep up with the latest news and product releases. Do you feel like you're keeping up with new developments or worry that you might be missing out on helpful improvements? Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green of Infostar.com is here for the next half hour to give us advice and to answer your questions. He'll also share this month's top 10 list of useful websites. What's going on with your computer? Thinking it might be time to replace your current machine, but not sure what you need? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. And don't forget to visit our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Like the page to receive regular updates on upcoming show topics. Lots more to talk about with Peter Green. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. With so many of us using computers every day at home, at work, or both, we rely on them a lot. And we rely on Peter Green, too. Peter is an independent computer consultant, and he comes by the first Monday of each month to help us all with our computer problems. Peter, thanks again for spending the time with us today.
Always great.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Larry is on the WPR garden tour of London and Southeast England, and he very inconsiderately left Peter and me here. We will have a little talk with him when he comes back. But no, we're glad that Larry's there, and we're sure the WPR listeners who are with him are having a great time spending time with him like we always do, Peter.
We're all jealous.
We are all jealous. But I'm glad that they're there. It's probably cooler there, I'm guessing.
More than likely.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the time of the show each month that Peter shares his top 10, or in this case 11, list of useful websites that he's found for us for July. Pete, what's on the list this month?
Okay. They're all Infostar.com. You click on current top 10 or the archives, and you can go down to today's date.
And we have a link on the Facebook page, too, directly to it.
The first one is CanDoFinance.com, and it's just a financial resource covering just a wide range of topics such as mortgages, banking, credit cards, investing, just a lot of good stuff there. Number two, if you're looking for anything related to the career or education, the healthcare industry, great resource, healthcareercenter.org. Number three might come in handy. Sometimes you try to go to a website and you're like, why am I not getting through? It might say service unavailable, might not tell you anything. So this site is called websitedown.info, and it's pretty self-explanatory and gives you instructions about how to find out, you know, whether or not a website's up or not and why.
So, you know, you can figure out maybe if it's a problem on your end or on their end.
Right, exactly. Number four is a search engine. I put one up last month, too. You know, there's always that claims to be the most comprehensive people search on the web, that they dive into the deep web to bring you results you won't find in any other search engine. It's called PIPL.com. Number five.
Peter, is there a fee to use that, or is that a free one?
Well, there's some that's free, and then, of course,
so like one layer is free, and then if you want to go deeper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then number five, I don't remember how I stumbled across this one, but it's called Nine Wows. So number nine, WOWS.com. And it's just got some really neat pictures of places and things and occurrences all around our world. Plus, it's got some other funny and cute sites that I've linked to as well. If you're looking for books, you know, Amazon's not the only place. Barnes & Noble's not the only place. There are a lot of booksellers out there. Well, this website tries to pull them all together called DealOz, DealOz.com, and claim to search over 200 online bookstores, which is pretty crazy. Number seven is ContactHelp.com, a resource to help you locate contact information on companies that might be trying to hide from you. See how you can get through. Number eight, we were talking about this in
this
the break.
This one's really interesting.
To me, it blows me away. Discoverlife.org, it's a resource that provides free online tools to identify species. I could go on, but the fact that they even have 1,225,000+ species pages for
and
a website
and they're
in
interactive
itself,
encyclopedic
right,
pages. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
We'll have to
so
check that one out.
That one, you know, kids should be checking that out. That's just amazing. Number nine, tidbits.com. 22-plus year publication online for Apple and Macintosh news. Hmm. And then a Windows 7 website called 7tutorials.com to help you work with Windows 7. And then that number 11, I've had that up before, is the God Mode link for Windows 7. Just makes it easier for you to click on and off to configure your Windows 7 to make it work the way you want.
Great. As always, some really intriguing sites that I'm going to have to poke around on after the show, especially that discoverlife.org. That one really has me intrigued. Well, we have some folks that have been waiting oh so patiently to talk with you, Peter, so let's go right back to the phone. Bill in Sheboygan is next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I have a question about an error message I'm getting on my Windows. I've got the XP operating system with McAfee Total Protection. I used Google Chrome successfully for about a year, and suddenly I'm getting an error message. It's called error for invalid argument, and I can't get on to any. I tried deleting McAfee and then trying to do the Windows Chrome or the Google Chrome, and that doesn't work. The search I've done on the web about that message indicates it's something with the firewall, so I've kind of I've turned those off, and nothing seems to help.
What do you think, Peter?
Are you using any other web browser?
Well, I've got the Internet Explorer, which I've gone back to now because that's the only way I can get on, and Gmail is my email, and it works pretty slow with Internet Explorer.
Yeah,
Explorer.
You should also download Firefox. I would, you know, having Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Google Chrome are all good things to have, especially like in your case when you develop a problem with one, you have at least one, if not two, to fall back on. Have you done any research as related to that error four in terms of how to approach solving it? Have you gone to any forums, or have you gone to Google's website?
Yeah, and all the messages indicate it has to do with the firewall. That's why. So I've disabled the firewalls, and you know, tried it, and it uninstalled the McAfee, and then tried it. I've uninstalled the Google Chrome, and then tried to reinstall it, and nothing seems to help.
There's obviously something else that's still running a roadblock, and it might be something that was tripped and left behind that hasn't been removed from your system. Have you done a registry cleaner on your system at all?
Yes, I've got Speci, you know, the
so the C Cleaner product.
The C Cleaner product, right? I've run all of that.
Okay. And you tried reinstalling Chrome?
I did, yeah, numerous times.
And it still comes up with that error message.
Right. As soon as I have to do the, I forget the term, where you synchronize,
you know, then, and put in my password and everything, then I get that error message again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not quite sure what caused the error, but it sounds to me like there's still something that's tripped on your... there's some flag somewhere underneath the hood that needs to be reset, and it's not getting it's not happening. And somewhere online, you're going to have to find, either through forms or through Google, and you might want to try and see if you can troubleshoot it through Google and explain to them the different things that you've attempted and if they have any other suggestions.
I think it's the McAfee that is doing that.
Then you might want to see, check into making sure that McAfee is, how to check and make sure it's completely removed from your system, that there might be some controls still left behind from it that you have to reset.
Okay.
So some kind of residual parts of it?
Yeah, there are a number of different ways within the Windows operating system that you can make changes to services and things. There's services.msc, which gives you access to things that are running in the Windows operating system. And you have to know what changes to do to make the effect work the way you want. So, for example, I was going to allude to it earlier. When Windows 7 has a problem communicating with Windows XP, one of the ways to try and make the communication between the two OSs work longer is there are privileges that are set by default in the Windows operating system. And you can actually set it to zero so it doesn't have a number given to it. And by removing that number and making it zero, makes it work longer than it usually does. So there are little tweaks that you can do to that, but you have to know, you know, where they are and what to change them to.
So it sounds like Bill should be checking with both Google and also checking for extra McAfee.
Yeah. Materials. Yep.
Great. All right. Good luck with that, Bill. And Shannon in Adams has a suggestion for a previous caller. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, previous caller called in was having some issues with authentication with his wireless network.
Okay.
Was wondering if he had gone into the network manager for the wireless networks into the properties and verified that the authentication was turned on or off. I install internet for a living, and that's an issue that I've run into quite a bit with the wireless networks is the computer all of a sudden has or is requiring authentication from the router, and the router is not programmed to give it. So now it sees the router, it sees that it's there, but it gets nothing from the router at all, even for internet services.
Right. It's a good point to look into. It is one thing he said it was working, and all of a sudden it stopped. So it could have been something that had been changed inadvertently. That's another thing to look at.
Great. Thanks for that suggestion, Shannon. And Sue in Baraboo. Hi, Sue.
Hey, I have what I hope is a really easy question for you as opposed to all of these really difficult ones. I have an iPod and a Mac, and I have photos on my iPod that I have not successfully been able to sync over to my Mac, and I'm scared to do it because I don't want to lose them. And I've looked on the Internet, and I think that what goofs me up when I'm looking at the screen, which I'm looking at right now, is that it says sync photos from iPhoto. So in my head, that means that I'm trying to take them from my computer and put them onto my iPod, and that's not what I want to do. Help!
So is it an iPod or an iPad?
iPod.
iPod, okay.
Yep. I'm in iTunes.
Yep. Okay, so typically when you hook up your iPod to your computer, and it brings up iTunes, it's syncing and looking to take what's on your iPod and bring it over to your computer. So whether it's a Mac or a Windows machine, it's trying to just say, hey, I can back this stuff up for you. So one thing is to make sure that you, you know, invoke the backup and you have all the different areas of the iPod clicked or selected so that you're backing them up.
Right.
The other thing is to use iPhoto as a means of grabbing what's on your iPod and bringing them over to an area on your Mac to work with them.
So then is it in my head, because what it says on the computer screen, on the Mac screen, on the laptop screen, is right. Sync photos from iPhoto. So that is telling me that it wants to bring them from... See, I think way back when I first got this, I think it actually took everything from my computer and put it onto the iPod, and that's not what I wanted to do.
Correct. Yep. Now, you want to make sure it's coming from your iPod, and you should be able to see on your screen that it's selecting it from that device where it's located.
Okay. Yeah, I wish that it gave me... Because in my head, it doesn't... if I choose selected albums, events, faces,
right,
then if I would, you know, then it does let me select them.
Mm-hmm.
But if I go apply, then I'm, like I said, I'm just worried that it's...
Well, here's the other thing. One is to make sure that it usually asks you the question, do you want to delete these after it's done? So you would say no.
Right.
The other thing is the pictures that are on your iPod should be unique in what it sounds like in your situation. So if they're unique to the iPod and you're mm-hmm. seeing them,
mm-hmm.
then that should kind of trigger what's on the screen as to where they're where they really are located. Because if you're saying they're only on the iPod, they're not residing on your computer until you actually bring them over, even though you're seeing them because it's
exactly.
a function of the software.
Right, right. And that's what I want to do. I just want to make sure that they're on my computer so that I have
right.
them in more than one place.
Now one thing to play you through the whole thing is to probably go to something like YouTube.
Yeah.
And just click on tutorial iPod photo transfer to Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Oh, because I Googled it, but I didn't go to like... And honestly, if I Google it, it comes up with all the same questions that I do.
But I'm talking about going to YouTube and actually watching a video.
Okay.
There are a lot of people that have put out videos about mm-hmm. that stuff.
Sure.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Sue.
Well, then it's possible.
It
yes,
is.
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. That's all I want to know. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
yep,
Sue.
Have
and
fun.
If you have a question for Peter Green, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Peter, another photo question on Facebook. Laura wrote, is there an online photo storage site that you recommend, i.e. Dropbox, Picasa, etc.? Picasa, I think it is. I'm looking for safe storage of our family digital photos and also to free up space on our PC.
There are a number of sites that I've linked to for doing backups. They all have different fee structures. Some are free, you know, for maybe 2 gigs of space or 5 gigs, and then they charge you. I think there's a site that I use. I'm not sure how much space they allow for free, but it's called SOS Backup Online, SOS. But
and what about specifically for photos? Because if people want to add captions or anything like that, I think it's more specific, more specialized maybe.
Well, there are sites that allow you to create albums and do some manipulation with pictures versus just simply storage,
right.
you know, and a place to put them.
And what are some of those?
Was it Snapfish?
Snapfish, and Laura also mentioned Picasa, which mm-hmm. I know is one. And I think, like a website you talked about earlier, there are free levels, and then,
right.
you know, if you're trying to
upload
thousands.
Carbonite, I think, mm-hmm. is one that is advertised a lot. And, you know, there's probably at least 10 or more to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it becomes a matter of how much space you need. And pictures these days take up more and more room because if you're using... It used to be, you know, maybe a 4 megapixel, 5 megapixel. Now they're 10, 12, 16, 18 on the high end. And that eats up space pretty fast. So you want to be efficient with it, too.
Great. Thanks for that question, Laura. And Lynette in Hubertus is next. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. I was wondering, you may have spoke of this earlier and I missed it. What is your recommendation on an inexpensive portable hotspot that 4 congruent users could use?
So 4 people to use a portable Wi-Fi hotspot.
So a portable Wi-Fi hotspot. Now, that's got a couple of issues with it. One is it going to be a Wi-Fi hotspot for sharing, like, cellular signal, or is it going to be for a Wi-Fi hotspot in a hotel room? Because they make portable devices where they're, like, probably $30, and you just take them when you travel, so you plug it into your hotel network connection, and now you've got your Wi-Fi mm-hmm. hotspot in your hotel room for all your devices.
How are you going to use it, Lynette?
For home and business, okay. Rather than having an internet connection, I disconnected DSL and mm-hmm. don't want to go cable, don't want to go Roadrunner, or I can't go Roadrunner.
Okay. Well, you're kind of limiting your options for doing that. It probably what's going to end up being more expensive is using, you can use cell service does Wi-Fi, and I'm pretty sure Verizon has a device. I'm not sure if AT&T does or not. They might. They probably are not far behind with one, where you bring in the Wi-Fi from the cell service, and then you distribute it through this wireless router that creates the hotspot from that signal. There might be some limitations in terms of how much they give you access to, and again, the service can kind of be amoeba-like in terms of, you know, like with cell service, sometimes it fades in and fades out. It's never perfect mm-hmm. unless you live in, like, right near the tower. You know, the DSL, the cable service, from a cost standpoint, might actually work better, and then you bring that cable or DSL signal into a Wi-Fi device mm-hmm. to broadcast the signal for you.
All right. And a very quick question from Ann in Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
I received an iPod from my niece a couple years ago for Christmas, and I listened to it religiously. And I noticed the other day when I went to turn it on, I think there's a crack in the screen. And I'm lost without it, and I'm wondering, what are my options for getting this repaired? A, is it worth it financially for the cost of the repair? And B, am I better to go to an Apple store, or is there an online service I could use to get this looked at?
Okay, let's see what Peter has to say.
So what did you crack the screen on?
I'm not sure why I cracked it on, but it appears that there is a crack in the screen.
Okay. So what are your options for getting that fixed? Well, one is, you know, you bring it into the store, and they'll tell you, you know, what the cost is going to be from them. The other option is there are places that sell the replacement screens for virtually anything on eBay. I mean, it's amazing to me how many places out there sell replacement screens for cell phones and iPads and laptops and flat screens and things like that. So that's a good source, but then you have to figure out how do you actually go through the mechanics of replacing the screen. Some of them actually give you instructions to show you how easy it is to do. So, you know, that's an option as well. And then just simply doing a Google search and see if there are places that will take your system in and, you know, within a week's time send it back to you and, you know, guarantee the repair on it. So,
and she also might want to compare prices of a new iPod too.
Right. Yep.
Because depending on how much shipping and fixing mm-hmm. and all that cost.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, and we'd hate for you to be without your iPod. Just the last minute here, Peter, we had a question. You had recommended a place to purchase laptops online, and the caller wanted to know if you meant Tiger Direct, or is it a website just called Tiger?
I think it's called, well, it's Tiger Direct, but okay. I think they also have acquired the the website name tiger.com.
All right. Well, Peter Green of infostar.com, always a pleasure, and always more calls and questions than we could get to.
And hopefully it'll be cooler the next show.
Although July, I'm not sure, or August. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for so much for coming by, and I hope you'll stay tuned. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. Tomorrow we will be talking about everything you wanted to know about Indians but were afraid to ask at 11, and the Hmong American experience at 11:45. Stay tuned to the Ideas Network.